The views and opinions expressed on Lifeguards Off Duty are those of its hosts and guests exclusively. They do not represent any entity, organization, or municipality.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Michael Kaczmar.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Lifeguards Off Duty with Dr. Michael Kaczmar, the Jersey Shore number one lifeguard themed video podcast.
Watch us on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook Live. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever streaming service you prefer.
If you would like to contact us, send an email to drkaczmar@icloud.com. Follow us on Instagram at lg.association.
All right, let's get started.
Let's start the show.
Let's do it.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Kaczmar. Welcome to Lifeguards Off Duty with Dr. Michael Kaczmar. Today's date is the January 17th, year of our Lord, 2023. And thank you for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We're on all our, we're on YouTube, our Rumble, Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Twitter, and Twitch.
How are you going to do today with the mouth that you just, the surgery you just had?
I'm fine. I just
ready to go?
Just had a tooth removed, yeah. So we have Tyler.
Look at us starting before 6 o'clock.
Sheesh. Tyler, your head's getting cut off there.
Yeah, I got it.
And we got Sean.
What's up, guys?
Yeah, well, I have to get out of here. I have a basketball game I got to go to.
You're playing basketball?
No, but I'm going
to
watch.
I'd like to see you play basketball.
Kaczmar would be a mean power forward.
I tell you what I did not recently. I went to go to Red Bank. In Red Bank, there's a thing called Count Basie Theater. And I went there to watch Matilda, which I think is like one of the worst plays. It's like evil. It's evil. Do you ever watch? Do you ever see?
I'm just waiting for this story to round back to basketball.
Because Ava was there. She wants to be in that whole stuff.
Why don't you like Matilda?
I think it's just the woman's like a Nazi. It's like brutal. It's really sad.
But Matilda's not.
Yeah, she's the only. Yeah, but it's like, man, that's a rough. But I tell you what, I have to give it to those kids. Those kids were so young and they were so good. They were unbelievable. I think the girl who played Matilda, I mean, she's maybe 12 years old. Oh my God, what a set of lungs on her. And they were just so good. They really were. I was very surprised.
I'm always pretty impressed by a kid that can act really well.
Yeah, they were really good. It's funny because one of our buddies, Chris McDowell, his wife and their daughter were there the night before. So it's pretty good. So anyway, ooh, that's a nice one. Let me see.
If you ever want to be impressed by a kid that can act pretty well, I just saw the first episode of The Last of Us.
Ooh, that dropped.
That girl's going to win an Emmy.
Are they releasing that all at once or episodically?
Sunday, 9 p.m.
I like that streaming services are going back to that.
Yeah, because it gives you a week to do this right now. Talk about it, get hyped.
Yeah.
That show's going to be good. It's going to be
good.
Amazing good. Video game, good, The Last of Us. So much fun.
All right, well, let's go to the whiteboard. Let's see what you guys put up here. So today, you got to put the date up there. When you do the whiteboard, put the date on it, okay? Gotta be, so we have Surf It Passes Away. This is serious. The way surfing, how do you pronounce it? Nazarene?
Yeah, so this was, I believe, over the past week, Marcio Fierre.
R's don't roll that well.
47-year-old surfer passed away surfing Nazaré, getting towed into a wave. He's the first one to ever die there.
So what was, it was.
So he got towed into the wave. He must have wiped out.
Yeah, but they got oxygen. They got vests.
They got him to the beach and
he died of a heart attack.
Yeah, and the cause of death was listed as cardiac arrest.
So he must have had some underlying issue.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Listen, 49, you start hitting that age, you could have cardiovascular disease, and he probably never tested himself.
47.
Yeah. And, with corona and the vaccine and, not saying he did drugs, but, I mean, you could just congenital. I mean, there's a lot of people who have heart, maybe had nothing to do.
Was that a sneaky little thing that enlarged hearts from the vaccine? Was that what you just did there?
No. But we talked about this last time. There's a lot of things that will cause you to go, awry. Like we had a guy years ago who worked on the beach patrol.
Potentially myocarditis.
No, he had an enlarged heart. It's a congenital thing. I got a patient right now. I got an x-ray. We were going to do a surgery on him. And he has an enlarged heart. It's a congenital thing. It's cardiomyopathy. It could have been a virus. It could have been a lot of things. What's affecting a lot of people's hearts has been, and it's starting to come back now, people are starting to use cocaine again. And cocaine is a rough one on your heart. But pot, you know, any kind of drugs could, you know, affect your body.
I don't think that guy was doing cocaine.
No. But listen, all I'm just saying is he could have had cardio artery disease. You know, and at that age, when the Vietnam War was on, right, this is an interesting, there was a big study. They took these kids who died, and they did autopsies on them. And this is the first time they did it for cardiovascular disease and heart, you know, disease of the arteries. And it was really heavy duty. So, you know, you could be any age. So it's tragedy. But they do have a lot of safety mechanisms there. I know they have the vests on and the oxygen. So, but that's what they, so he was alive when they got him in, or they thought he?
Unconscious.
Unclear if. He was actually alive. But yeah, so Friere, he starred in a documentary in 2016 called Mad Dogs, which followed him and two other Brazilian surfers as they attempted to become the first people to paddle into Jaws in Hawaii, which is traditionally a wave that you get towed into. So he actually paddled into this wave and was the first one to do it. People thought it was impossible.
Yeah,
he grew up in Bahia, Brazil, before moving to Hawaii. And, you know, he was just like the epitome of surf life. He actually never really made money from surfing. He didn't take sponsorships. He was pretty much like working trade jobs to like fund his surf trips. You know, he's like the idea of a soul surfer.
Yeah.
I was like doing some research like briefly before the show. It said his net worth was like $1 million. So I'm sure he had like some sponsorships, but and you made a good point when we were looking into this, like for whatever reason, and I guess it just goes with like the way surfers look at life in general, like people don't, they're not really like the most famous athletes. You know, you could be like at the top of the game at surfing, and
yeah, have you heard
the world might not really know who you are outside of the surfing community.
The term surfer's mentality, just about like being on the wave and then knowing it's going to crash down on you and not being concerned with that.
Yeah, just like just letting the ocean take you.
No, just being comfortable with like the inevitability that like the fun will end.
Yeah, Jack and I had a really interesting conversation on our way to soccer last night, and he just got back from Costa Rica. Oh, he was surfing out there. Kind of little sidebar. He was telling me he went to, I think it might have been Hermosa Beach. I could be wrong about this. He definitely went to Hermosa Beach.
Did he see Ward?
Yeah, he did. He hung out with Ward for a night.
That's one of our ex-lifeguards.
But
Hermosa Beach could have been a good segue. But
he said he was telling me like about this wave that he was surfing. He's like, it is the best wave in the world, but there's one pretty big caveat. And I'm like, what is it? And he's like, saltwater crocodiles. He paddled out into water that had saltwater crocodiles in it. But anyway, he's telling me about this app he had downloaded that he like linked to his Apple Watch that gives you surfing stats. And they did a study, you know, just like using all the stats they've compiled through all the surfers that have signed up for the app. And one thing, how about both of you guys will guess how much percentage wise time of a surfing session do you think is spent actually riding a wave?
One.
Two, your guess is 2%.
I'd say about riding away. I'd say about 20% of the time.
2.5%.
Yeah.
Wow.
2.5%.
I thought it was more than that.
Yeah. So, like you said, that surfer's mentality, like, it's not about riding the wave.
No, it's being.
It's about, you know, bobbing up and down in the surf, staring off into the horizon. Just the idea that you're sitting, you know, chest deep, half in this medium that you are like have no control of yourself in, where something could just snap up on you in a second and take your life, but you're accepting that because there's a kind of a peace that comes with it.
Well, two things I like to say is that number one, he died doing what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. Not it's a good thing that he died, but he was doing something that he enjoyed.
And if you would have asked him a week before, how would you like to go out?
Yeah.
That might have been
the other thing is I don't surf anymore, but when I did, it was 50-50.
I saw you pop up on your knees a couple times this summer.
You know, I get bored really quick. I am not one of those guys. I mean, I had friends go out there and they sit around for hours and shoot the breeze. You know, like, hey, what are you doing? You know, I got out, I surfed, I got in. If I rode waves, if there was none, I got out. I was never, you know, but there are a lot of people, they love it. But you are right. I mean, the time you get out, especially if it's a lot of ocean, mm-hmm. you know, turn around. But I never was that kind of guy.
For me, it's the paddle out. I just don't enjoy. That's why I always kind of just stick to body surfing. Just throw some fins on. I'll get out twice as fast as you on a board.
Yeah, you can't. But, you know, with a short board,
especially.
A boogie board is hard to get out. But anyway, that's interesting stat, though. Well, listen.
Rest in peace, Marco Frijer.
You know, me, we say prayers. You know, that's a bad thing now, but I don't care. You know, our prayers go out to him and his family. And
no one thinks it's a bad thing.
Oh yeah, trust me. I put a thing out.
You're worried about what people say. Don't even care.
That's right. All right. So listen. It happens. But I don't think he died from the surfing. Probably had some cardiac thing. You know. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you get tossed 100 feet straight down and then crushed by thousands of tons of water. That's gonna trigger cardiac arrest.
So let's see. Well, I don't know about that, but who knows? We don't know. We'll never know.
Testament to these guys, you know, for riding those waves. Like, actually, the first one to ever ride that wave was an American. Fun fact.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I was an American. But two junior lifeguards saved their dad.
So this is the next one on the whiteboard. Junior lifeguards saved dad. So where was this at? Tell us about the story.
This was in Hermosa Beach, which I was alluding to earlier. Two teenagers, 13 and 15, their dad went unconscious while talking on their phone with their mom. He was walking up the stairs.
Right.
And fell on his back. The kids said that it looked like he was just staring into the distance, just frozen, staring up. The oldest immediately went into CPR mode, like checked airways, breathing, circulation, started doing rescue breaths. The youngest grabbed the phone and spoke to the mom, briefly hung up, called 911. I think the mom was on a run, and she said she never ran quicker in her life trying to get back. And all three of them performed CPR at that point until paramedics arrived. The dad was unconscious for 27 minutes, and was shocked four times by an AED.
Has he made a full recovery?
He made a full recovery and is working out.
Didn't we talk about this recently?
How slim the chances are.
Well, maybe you didn't.
No. It was when we were doing CPR, like, refresher at the Y. Yeah. Remember, I asked Kim, I was like, hypothetically, because, you know, like, if your brain doesn't get enough oxygen, Catch, you can weigh in here, for X amount of time, you're going to go brain dead. Mm-hmm. But by doing CPR, you're keeping the blood pumping throughout the body. So that's when I asked Kim, I was like, hypothetically, if say someone's not breathing, right, but I've been doing CPR and circulating the blood and giving them rescue breaths for however long, could they go past that brain dead point?
Could you manually pump a heart?
It sounds like this is what happened. He was unconscious.
Now, first of all, a couple things is that there is a time frame. I mean, you'll even though you're doing good CPR and everything, you're going to start losing the gain. So you can't do it forever.
Extend through that?
If the heart stops beating, you're done.
Yeah, you could breathe
for something. Actually, there are implants you could put in. Pumps that help the heart pump and everything.
Isn't that what Dick Cheney has?
No. This is be like an intensive care unit. They actually have fake hearts, but there's pumps that they put in your artery in your leg. But here's the thing: if you ask the question, really, the question I thought you were going to ask is that how many people who get shocked will survive?
That we talked about recently.
That's about 50%. It used to be very small, 10%. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I read anywhere between 10% and 50%. And it used to be very, very small amount of people. It really depends on what why you have the cardiac arrhythmia.
He had a idiopathic, which if I don't know what that means.
Means there's no reason, no known reason for it. But if you have, here's the thing: if you have a
that's why we have him.
If you have an arrhythmia, see, the heart doesn't pump right. It still has electricity. If it has what's called an arrhythmia, and it's one that could be shockable, then the AED can really help. Some people have, a stroke or a PE. That's a little difficult. More some people, their heart stops because of drugs. You know, so all the CPR world is not going to help you unless you get, like, say, Narcan. But getting back to the situation with these kids, yeah, I mean, if they shocked him four times, what saved his life is not only the CPR but the shocking. You know, get that pump going. And but there is a limit. If you have asystole where there's no electrical activity of the heart, the machine won't shock you, and you could do CPR until the cows come home. You put medication in there. You put epinephrine. There's other things you give, hopefully to stimulate the heart.
Have you ever had an epinephrine shot?
No, what do you mean? Well, no,
adrenaline, right?
Yeah. Well, there's epinephrine too. You put it in local anesthesia. It's a vasoconstrictor. Stops bleeding.
I feel like that's got to be an insane rush.
Well, when you give it that way, it's a whole different thing. You know, the patient's unconscious, but yeah. No.
Do any of you guys have allergies, an EpiPen?
No. But there's a lot of different, but anyway, so that's great. So the kid saved his dad's life. How long ago was that?
This was in August. The acting fire chief at the time said that they showed values of caring, courage, and teamwork, and the instincts were from the training they had as JLGs.
I think that everybody should not only learn how to do CPR, but learn how to set up an AED. You also, if there's in doubt, if you have a person who's laying unconscious and you have doubt, you know, you check the circulation, you check their pulses, you're not sure, start CPR and get an AED.
I mean, this 15-year-old, like, could you imagine being in his shoes? Like, that's a pretty good age, but at the time. Yeah.
Well, it's his father, too. That's the emotion of that. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
And he didn't lock up. Yeah. He instantly did it.
I mean, like I said, I've done codes in the hospital with the old paddles. You know, we had paddles, and you put the gel on, you rub them together. You know, you ever see the movies? I mean, we used to use those things, you know. And, now the AED is so brain dead easy to use. It's an amazing instrument. And I think they've probably gotten better. Back in the early days, they probably weren't as good. Yeah, they're amazing now. And but you gotta do good CPR, and you gotta be trained. Well, you guys know how to do it. But there's good quality CPR, and if you don't do it right, it's not going to help. And mm-hmm. on the beach, I really have everything set up where we'll bag them too and give them oxygen. But that's a pretty interesting story.
Sean, was there an AED in the house?
No, the paramedics arrived from Hermosa Beach Fire Department, and
they probably got there pretty fast. So you're asking how long? You know, say 4 minutes, but some people say 4 to 10. You know, when it's hard to know, because when you're doing CPR, you are oxygenating the brain for sure. And, maybe the heart is still pumping, but not that well. You know, when there's a arrhythmia, the patient may be still getting some blood circulation, but very minimal. And it's questionable whether or not how effective the breaths are, because there's a lot of oxygen in the blood for a while. So if you guys were trained, when you did your CPR just recently, did they teach you to do the breaths too? Because a lot of EMTs now, not EMTs, but the local...
They don't want you to anymore, right? No, yeah, rescue breaths. No,
I first got it, it was rescue breaths, and right. Now it's not.
Right. It gets complicated. I mean, if you can, you do rescue breaths or you bag them. You know, you get them on compressions, and you get the AED. And then you get somebody who oversees everything. You know, every 2 minutes you change. You start another fresh person to do the compressions, and you watch them. There's actually things you could buy, these things that will show you if you're going down far enough, you know.
Yeah, I just saw one of those.
Yeah, but in the hospital, we get an IV going, and that's another whole thing. When you get the advanced stuff, actually, if you can't get a good IV, you could actually, you put this thing right into the bone, in their shin bone, and get access to the marrow, and you could put medication in that way.
Cass, you ever get one of those vitamin IVs? You ever think about that?
Nah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Nah, I don't know what they put in it. You got to be careful.
You could get your hands on that, right? We could be in here before shows.
We used to do IVs. We used to do IVs down in the islands when I worked down there. People would come in, and it's so hard to put them in hospital. You get an IV, and you give them, they're dehydrated. But what's interesting is that this doctor had IV with epinephrine and anesthesia in it. They it's used for anesthesia. And anyway, one of the other doctors took the IV home, to hydrate herself, and she died. You know.
Wow.
Of course, she gave it into her vein. Yeah, you got to be careful with that stuff. It's got to be clean. You know, you got to make sure what's in there.
There's nurses, like actual RNs or practicing nurses, that give out these vitamin IVs.
It's down here on billboards. It says, you know, people who are hungover.
Yeah, like Sandy IVs or something. I forget the brand.
Yeah, they go in and I don't know what they charge. They give you an IV and they give you electrolytes and shit like that. It's, you know, I don't know what they charge, but I don't know.
Is that pseudo medicine?
No. It could help. I mean,
vitamins, you know, right to your bloodstream.
You know, it's just. It's,
but isn't that?
I don't think it's.
Isn't
I don't
the efficacy of taking vitamins debated.
It's not just vitamins. It's potassium. It's electrolytes. Here's the thing: if you're hungover, you know what you do? You have some eggs, some orange juice. You know, before you go out in the night, you take some Aspirin.
Jersey ham.
Yeah, some Jersey ham. You have a good breakfast. You hydrate, you drink, and you get some protein on board, you'll be fine. A lot of people, here's what happens with drinking. Alcohol, it does a couple things, but it dehydrates you because it's a diuretic. So you pee your brains out. When you start going, so now you're dehydrated. So in the morning, you got to hydrate. So you drink, and you drink like water, not stuff that's, you know, stupid. You could drink, I guess, Gatorade. The other thing is what happens is you get hypoglycemic. It lowers your blood sugars, believe it or not. Alcohol lowers your blood sugars. I'm not going to get into it how it does, but it does. So you're low on sugar. So you need sugar. Orange juice is great. There's nothing better than a big glass of orange juice to get your sugar up.
I got sent a video today that said that the carbohydrates in alcohol are more bioavailable than,
I think, beer.
Anything else?
Say it again now.
The carbohydrates in beer are more bioavailable than any other way you can get them, so you should drink a beer before you work out.
Yeah, no, I heard this in high school. This was like a.
I don't know what you mean by carbohydrates. Here's the thing: beer has a lot of things in it, but it has alcohol in it. And alcohol is alcohol. I like when people say, "Oh no, you know, alcohol in beer is different than the alcohol in wine, or different than in hard liquor."
No, but the abundance of carbohydrates you can take in from drinking beer fuels your muscles better
bullshit. I never heard. I tell you what, they talk about caffeine. Here's the thing. Alcohol is it's a fatty molecule. What happens with alcohol is it goes right in. Here's when you eat food, right? Whatever you eat, carbohydrates, fat, proteins, it goes into your intestine. The body works it. It goes into your liver. And then it's either used as energy, you know, and goes into your bloodstream as glucose, which is what is needed for the cell. Each cell only uses glucose. That's what the food for the cell is. Or what will happen is the liver. What's that?
Ketones.
No, that's different. But then the liver will take the extra glucose and put it into fat stores. Okay, but it goes into that mechanism. It goes into glucose first, and then you use it. Alcohol will go right into the liver and go into fatty stores.
The alcohol part of your beer is for sure bad for you, but the
carbohydrates. I don't know what kind of carb. You know, there's a lot of different kind of carbohydrates.
I'm not saying alcohol carbohydrates are better. I'm saying the abundance of carbohydrates you get per calorie in beer is very.
I don't think I don't know. I don't know what you mean by that.
I can tell you.
Men's health. New research suggests drinking a natural beverage such as fruit juice, milk, or even beer after exercise could be more effective than highly engineered beverages designed specifically to aid in workout recovery.
Right. I can say that Schwarzenegger used to put schnapps in his protein shakes.
Yeah. Listen, alcohol, you know, wine, it's not a bad thing. People used to drink it all the time. But the thing is, whether or not they did it and it makes a difference, it goes, alcohol, you get fat really, if you drink a lot, you'll get fat more because it goes a lot of times right to your fat stores.
Yeah, right to your stomach.
Right, and that's why alcohol, you know, is not the greatest thing in the world for you. So, all right, so let's go to the next one. You should be on my show, Dr. Catchmore. So what's this?
Oh, this is a lifeguard topic. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, I think, it used to be caffeine.
There's a meme that I just saw about lifeguarding Catchmore where it's Cheech drinking beers with a like a white guy, and it says Australian lifeguards right before tournaments compared to Americans, and he just drinks the white guy under the table, saying like the Australians are gonna just mess us up as after drinking.
Yeah.
Didn't someone tell us that story? Like the Lavalette guard that we had on.
Yes. Yeah, he was talking about Jokic.
Listen, I tell you something about alcohol. You know, in different parts of the world, people drink like beer and wine at lunch. And they're working. They're doctors. They're you know, cops. Mm-hmm. It's not considered taboo.
No, hard liquor is like new. It's like 200 like
down,
years old.
Down
like
where I work, down the islands, 300. Down where I in the islands, you go out for lunch. People would have a drink, and they're going back to work. They're cops. They're doctors. They're lawyers. They're, you know, whatever, anything. Construction workers. They wouldn't think anything about it. And when you say, "Do you drink?" they're like, "No," you know, and they'll have a can of beer in their hand, and they'll tell you that. You know, it's like they're like, "That's not alcohol." You know, it's just, it's a, you know. So no.
I found a study done by Brazilian scientists. Okay, where subjects were split into four of the following groups. One, they drank non-alcoholic beer and had normal sleep. Another group had alcoholic beer and normal sleep. A group with non-alcoholic beer and sleep deprivation, and an alcoholic group with sleep deprivation. Those drinking alcoholic beer were asked to consume 1 gram of alcohol per kilo of body weight. Mm. So if I weighed 50 kilos, I'd drink 50 grams of alcohol of beer. Most lagers are 2 units of alcohol, blah, blah, blah. The non-alcoholic group drank the equivalent amount in their substitute beers. Next morning, all involved were sent to the gym to assess the following: neuromuscular performance, or the agility to generate power, and how quickly it took to become fatigued.
So who?
And go ahead.
No, so who came out on top?
Yeah, yeah.
No
and
difference.
Muscle activation. Using
no
the
difference.
You know, why you gotta?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, he asked the question. Sorry.
Were you reading while talking, Cashmore?
I speed. I read the whole thing in 1 second.
Muscle activation. Yeah, but this isn't for us. I've read this whole thing too.
Just put it up. Yeah.
Muscle activation using the quad extension exercise. Across all four groups, there was no difference in neuromuscular performance.
Yeah, but I get this, but like long-term effects definitely would, the alcohol probably would.
Well, yeah, that's the same with that Game Changers movie, that vegan movie. It was just testing the effects of like the workout, like right after you ate whatever meal, or how your body was responding like directly after eating that meal.
That was a big documentary.
Listen, a lot of times it doesn't matter. You know what used to be a big thing before a football game? All football players would eat steaks, big steaks, and beer, you know, or carbohydrates. Before, when I used to do triathlons, right? You know what it used to be? They would go to a triathlon, like, say, you know, a different area. They would have huge spaghetti dinners. Huge. What's going on here? What's going on?
No, I don't. We're good.
My uncle in the 70s said that they used to take salt packets instead of hydrogen.
So you would have these big spaghetti dinners before a triathlon. They would, you know, you go say, I went and did one in Maryland. So the night before.
I'm sorry.
We're just checking.
I don't know why all these just popped up. I don't know what just happened. We're good.
Check
sorry,
the,
guys.
Check the thing.
No, we are for sure live. I was just watching us live on every single website.
So having said that, is that, you know, that first of all, studies like this, I got to give you guys a little bit. This is not, you know.
Catch. They're Brazilian scientists.
I know, but there's nothing here. You got to read the paper, how old they were. I understand that, but they say there's no difference. That's fine. I'm not arguing with that. But I'm just saying these are little snippets. You guys, from a scientific standpoint, that means nothing to me. But I can tell you, there's been, over the years, all of these, you know, stories. Caffeine will help you. You got to work out. We used to do caffeine. You know what just... It was a big thing. They used to have the Penn State workout. That was the big thing back in the day. You know, you had to, you couldn't do arms the same day you did legs or chest. It was like this whole thing. And we all, and just like with oxygen, go back and look at old football games and you'll see the football players, NFL football players on the sidelines sucking down oxygen. Do you ever see it anymore?
Oh, they still do.
Why not?
It's basically blood doping.
No, it's not. It does nothing. It does nothing. No, they don't.
You think it does nothing?
No, it's not very rare.
They still do that, I think.
No. It's not. But there's a lot of things that we did years ago that we thought, and that was there for a long, long, long time. It does shit. It does nothing. But I tell you, hydration is still the most important thing. Dehydration. Not everybody is the same. Some people hydrate more less or quicker than others. Well, that's why we see on the beach. We talk about lifeguarding. You'll get a kid or a girl. It's mostly girls. They'll pass out. It'll be a hot morning. And what happens is they were out drinking. They're they're hypoglycemic. Yeah, they're low on sugar. They had their period. They're bleeding. There could be a little bit anemic. They're dehydrated.
That was sexist.
No, it's not. Women, you don't have menstrual cycle, but if you do, you're.
I could.
You're, sometimes you could. I feel you're like right.
Don't put me in a box.
Yeah, don't put you in a box. Yeah, well, you got, you know. That's not sexy. That's the problem with your generation.
Let's not open up this can of worms. Let's not open up this can of worms right now.
Yeah, okay? So my point is, that's why it depends. That's why you have to ask people, you know. But point is, the best thing, again, for all of this is if you're drinking heavy at night, hydrate, get some sugar on board. And
eat a pork roll, egg, and cheese.
That's right. I'll tell you, pork and with a glass of orange juice.
That's all you need.
Or on
a Kaiser roll, listen, not a bagel.
I don't want to admit to this, but I've heard this, and where there's another thing you could do in the morning if you're really hungover, and they call it the hair of the dog. You know what that means?
You ever did the hair of the dog before?
You know what that means?
I have no idea what that means.
You don't know what that means?
Hair of the dog?
Yeah. You just keep drinking. You just roll it into the next.
Just have another beer. I tell you what,
that works.
It works. But when you crash and burn,
some Sunday mornings, me and the lady, we had a late night on Saturday, and I'm up early watching soccer, like 7:30 a.m. I've done it.
Oh, I know it works. Yeah.
I tell you, I'll give you one story, and I shouldn't say this because this is going to go out in cyberspace. This is my college days. I remember, getting hammered, right? And it was a Friday night, and we stopped at. White Castle and got a bunch of White Castle burgers, right?
They're so and good.
They're so good. So anyway, so
college, we go. White Castle, maybe marijuana?
It might have been a Saturday
this?
Night. I never did drugs. No, seriously. No drugs. But here's the thing. Just booze. But so it was probably Saturday night.
Lots of booze.
So usually Sunday we chill out. But this Sunday, I think we were going to go to another dorm or another place to watch a football game, right? We get in the car, so we probably got up, probably 11, we're so hungover. So the game maybe starts at 1, I don't know, 3, whatever it was. But I remember getting in the car, and we had a bunch of beers ready to go. And so we started drinking again, right? And I rarely ever did that. I mean, I wasn't a heavy drinker. I drank one night, and that's it. I didn't drink for like 2 weeks. But I remember getting in the car, and we got in the car, and there was like still a half, like about 5 or 6 White Castles. Now it was cold, so they probably stayed. So we basically 11, 12 in the morning, we're drinking beers and eating White Castle,
cold White Castle.
That was bad. White Castle was great.
White Castle is one of those things that I regret instantly, but while eating it, absolutely love it.
Now I give you another one.
Taco Bell too.
And I give you another thing for cure. Used to be really great. I lived in Philadelphia and I went to medical school there. And we would go out drinking, get hammered, and we used to, you get the munchies, and we used to go to
the munchies.
There was a place, well, not in smoke, but you were hungry, and it helped out because you weren't as bad next morning. We stop at this place, and it's I forget what it was called, Pasianque, but it was two steak places, Gino's, what was the other place? I forget. I don't know.
Where is this?
In Philadelphia.
Like the two big shops are right next door, right across
the street. It's like a cross street.
Literally like the steaks in Seaside Heights.
Like it's two
steaks,
famous places.
Original and then the original steaks.
Right, right. And there was a steak place on South Street. But this was a place in South Philly, and the roads made a cross. So it was like a cross. So it was like two triangles.
It's Gino's and Pat's.
Right, Pat's. And anything, like say something happened in the city. Say somebody got shot or there was a new mayor or some law, anything. Somebody, crashed their car. It's just, they would go to the man in the street and they'd go to Pat's or Gino's. And it was open 24 hours a day. They never closed. Always open. And we would go there. And it was just an amazing place. So that was another place to get, the munchies. And I give you one other place that I've been to. Again, these are all late night places that help you with your hangover. It's on the campus in Ohio State, and it's a place, it's called Eat It and Beat It. Mm. And I don't know if it's still there anymore. So it's Eat It and Beat It. So you walk in, right, and there's tables, and they'll place you. So like say you and Sean are sitting at a table. Mm-hmm. And say I come in with another guy. They'll put us with you guys, and we're facing each other. I don't even know you. And they don't. It's just how it is. You say, hey, what's up, dude? Yeah. And you order whatever it is, and then you're done. They don't give you a piece of paper that as soon as you're finished, they go out. Get out. Let's go. You can't stay. No talking. No, get
you
out.
You got to beat it.
And you got to beat it. And then when you go up front, you got, and you, I, there's no, he goes, what'd you have? I had an egg. Give me $2, you know, or $3. They looked at you like, if you look like you had money, they might hit you up higher. There was no, you're like, how much did you pay? I paid $6. How much did you pay? $2. I'm like, we had the same thing. It was the greatest place. And it was eat it and beat it. And it's big sciences, eat it and beat it. So there's my cures for...
Nothing slaps
the next day. Does this qualify as medical advice? Or should we put a disclaimer in front
of
this episode?
So eat before you go to sleep. I'm telling you, take aspirin before you go out or Tylenol. I used to take aspirin.
Before you go out?
Before you go out, so you don't get a headache. Remember, in the morning you get a headache. So aspirin or Tylenol, and make sure before you go to bed, eat some good food, you know, so you don't get... hypoglycemic and you know, and you should be good. Hydrate. You got to drink.
Nothing is better than just steaks. Gorging yourself on like a greasy cheesesteak.
Steaks, yeah. Steaks after drinking, there's nothing better.
Steaks Unlimited.
Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Seaside Tony.
Filled
cheese
with cheese balls. Ooh. You know, I used to, when I was a broke, like 2 year guard, everyone, we used to all go there, you know, when we were out drinking and stuff, and everyone would get like the Seaside Tony with like a side of fries. It's like a $15 meal.
$20 investment.
I would get a grilled cheese and french fries for $6. I'd be like digging into my pockets. That's so worth it. I love it. I still get it sometimes. Because
grilled
like,
cheese?
It brings me back, dude. It brings me back to Porter Avenue.
I can see that.
Good times.
We got anything else? Oh, what's this? Let's
the
go.
Cave, the cave swimmers. Of swimmers. So I'm reading a book right now. It's called Why We Swim.
Right.
Super, super interesting. And this lady's just talking about how just whatever she can figure out about, you know, the human relationship with the ocean. And early on in the book, she mentions this place called the Cave of Swimmers, which by all accounts is the earliest reference to human swimming. It's a cave painting that is dated to 9,000 to 6,000 years ago. But if you look at the pictures, they're pretty cool. Let's see. These guys right here.
Where was the cave?
Yeah, yeah. So this cave is located in the Gilf Kebir Plateau of the Libyan...
Hungary.
Libyan desert section of the Sahara.
Oh.
They were discovered by a Hungarian explorer in 1993 named... Laszlo Almasy. So if you guys look at this here, hold on, let me pull up the screen share for our...
So is this anywhere near water, or is this...
So, okay, this is what's interesting. I kind of found some, like, conflicting notations about this. So as you can see, though, like, we have these humans splayed out as if they're swimming. Catch, you want to look at that?
Yeah.
Now...
Yeah. I agree with that.
When this guy found this, this was in
1933. They could be doing a swinging on a, what do you call it?
Well, there are different theories about
Could be an acrobatic act right
there. Yeah, exactly. They're
the flying Luendo is the first. Trapeze. That's the first trapeze.
Yeah. So this Almsy guy discovers this in the 1930s, and his theory is that, you know, these people look like they're swimming, so odds are there was probably a body of water there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a... crazy theory back then. So crazy that the editor of the book that he published these findings in made sure that he made a notation at the bottom of the chapter where this is explained, saying that he himself, the editor, doesn't share Almsy's view. However, in 2007, his theory was basically confirmed when an Egyptian-American geomorphologist named Iman Gohanim, found a megalake in the area in northern Darfur, Sudan. Now, what wasn't clear to me was that if this megalake is the same location as two other lakes that scientists were referencing in the stuff that I was reading that are about 100-plus miles away. So to answer your question... it's not really clear whether, like, the lake was, at least to me at the moment, whether the lake was right there or if it was, like, a couple hundred miles away.
I'm just stuck on the 8,000 years ago part and the Younger Dryas concept.
Yeah.
So is that what they're thinking?
I mean, you know, we know that a long time ago the the Sahara was lush,
mm-hmm.
and that there was it was dotted with like lakes as big as like the Great Lakes, you know, everywhere. Now, do these cave paintings line up with that? And like geographically,
it seems
think
like the time yeah, frame.
I think it's there to be figured out. But like I said, some scientists they kind of disagree with this. One thinks it just is symbolic, and a few others think that they're simply depicting deceased people, similar to what are known as the coffin texts, which is ancient Egyptian, which are ancient Egyptian funerary spells written on coffins, which indicate figures of deceased souls floating in the waters of the Nun. And the Nun is like the primordial ooze in Egyptian mythology. It's a goddess that represents the primordial watery abyss that Ra, the sun god, rose out of. And they think that this kind of looks similar to that. So, and in that kind of interpretation, it's like, yeah, they are swimming, but not in the sense that
yeah,
they're
but
actually swimming in water.
People drew what they saw. Like this, if this guy didn't know people swam or swung from vines, like he wouldn't have drawn it because he would have no concept of that.
Or she.
Or she.
There's a bunch of other interesting paintings in this cave where this was discovered. You know, people doing all types of activities. There's actually these really cool negative handprints where the people in the cave, the artists, let's call them what they were, put their cave up to the wall and blew like whatever material they were using around their hand. So it has like this cloudy imprint of their hand. It's actually pretty cool.
I'm going to bust all your balloons. So go back up there. First of all, you know, Sean, what you say is that they draw what they see. Not necessarily. People draw what they don't see. People draw within their imagination. You know, they could be drawing somebody here thinking somebody could fly. You know, they see a bird and they make a human fly. There could be a lot of reasons. But I tell you what, that person is very fat. If you ask me, very unfit. From a doctor's standpoint,
right?
they look. Yeah, there's no. And is that a unisex person there?
I'll tell you what, they are. They definitely look like they're doing a breaststroke.
Yeah. Like that doggy paddle.
Yeah. You know, in the meantime, some 15-year-old kid like 3 years before this went in the cave and did that just to goof on everybody. And everybody's like, yeah. Anyway, listen, people had to swim. You know what's interesting? If you go back and look at all the literature, especially like with the English, you know, with the English Navy, most of the sailors couldn't swim. I'm cool. But they could float. So swimming and floating and not drowning is an interesting thing. That does look like people are floating around in water. So who knows?
So this is like
But a lot of it, what year was that?
8,000 years ago.
Between 9 and 6,000 years ago. Some scientists push it back to 10 or 12 sometimes. Scientists put it closer. But this right, I'm trying to find a bigger version of this image.
Yeah, who knows? It's hard to tell.
But I mean, it's definitely there to see why someone might think these people are swimming. But see, you have this stuff too, right? Like,
remember we talked about when people started swimming and like the turn of the century in the United States, people didn't go in the water and then they made this sport. But people had to go in the water. You know, people had to, you know, work on ships. I mean, but a lot of people didn't know how to swim. They would drown.
I mean, you know, say that there wasn't water around when these were painted.
80%. What percentage of the earth is? Yeah.
Here are those handprints.
They blew on it. Yeah.
See that?
Pretty neat, yeah.
And then also this one's really cool. It has people kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
On the inside of the palm there. You see that?
Yeah.
I find the link made between this and this Egyptian mythology
a bit much.
I find it interesting though.
Why?
You find it to be a bit much?
I just don't think, if this is in the Sahara, I guess it could be.
Well, they're drawing the link because of like the similarities of the images, I'm guessing.
So there might be hieroglyphics that look similar to people floating away?
Okay. Yeah. Regardless though.
Can you look up pictures of people floating in the Nun?
Yeah. Regardless though, I mean, this is like amazing for 10,000 years ago. People, you know, making art, that's amazing.
I think people did draw what they saw.
People, they've been fine. They find all kinds of stuff.
But, you know, this is making me think about Göbekli Tepe and how on the pillars there are depictions of animals that were not native to the area and the time period that this place is carbon dated to. And they're like we're talking about animals from across the world that are carved into stone from 12,000 years ago. So how did these people know what these animals looked like? You know, it's very interesting. But yeah, these are the coffin texts that the Cave of Swimmers is compared to. If I'm being honest, I don't see any similarities in any of these images.
Click on the black and white one. Is that not? I can't see them so far away.
This one right here.
Are they floating?
It's hard to get these like to blow up, like to be big. That's the Sphinx. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, well, it's interesting history. You know, human beings have been around a long time, and who knows? It's interesting. But swimming, you know, to bring that fact back, if there's water, people probably, you know, floated around in it. They had to survive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're one of the things that I read a book not too long ago is how the United States was populated. And they think there was two waves, you know, before the glaciers melted and then after the glaciers melted. Because actually there's two different genetic people in the United States. I'm talking about Indians-wise, you know, in South and North America. But there's two distinct populations, they think. Two types of
Native Americans?
Two different migration ancestries. And what they're thinking is the first migration was when they still had glaciers and these people came down on boats from
the Bering Strait.
Yeah, came across. There was ice. They came down with boats and they populated South America. I think the glaciers came down pretty far, maybe mid part of the United States. So there's no way they could have went through the glaciers, but they could have with boats. And then after the glaciers went away, like 10,000 years ago, there was another migration of people that came across, and they have a different genetics. So they were in boats. My point is, if you're in boats and you're floating around and you're doing, you know, for thousands of years, you got to figure some people fell off and had to learn how to swim or survive, or, you know, I mean, you know,
it was just an article that came out in the APP Kashmar where a fisherman was a shark caught his line and he was dragged 2 miles to sea by a shark. He thinks it's a shark that like was able to pull him out.
And old man to sea, man. Read the book.
Just on a kayak.
Hemingway. That's nothing new. Old man to sea.
He
was on a kayak and got pulled out.
Yeah. Didn't he have a knife to cut the friggin'
line? Why not just drop the rod at that?
The video of him, he looks very content while he's just being dragged out.
This is sick.
Yeah.
I told you, there was a guy in Seaside. Years ago, a lot of people, even this time of year, they would go down to the beach because they used to be, and fish. And it used to be, this time of year, you would have whiting and ling. And there would be schools and schools of them. And actually, sometimes on low tide, they'd wash up and they freeze. And you go in and you pick them up. They were like icicles and they were good to eat. You know, it's called whiting. This one year, and I was lifeguarding, so this had to be like in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And he had a boat and he went out there and had a little engine on it. And it was like a west wind. It was cold, and anyway, the engine didn't work. He tried to throw an anchor out. It was too deep. He threw the engine out on a line, and he just kept on drifting. And the only thing that they found him was a tanker that was going by. Happened to see him out there. I don't know if it was the next day, and they rescued him. Wow. But he got dragged all the way out there because of the wind. I guess it's just a story I just thought about, but you know, it's crazy stuff when you hear stuff like that. So, you know, the ocean is crazy. But swimming, back in the day, there had to be people that swam. Maybe they didn't record it, but they had to do something. Even Egyptians, they had big wars, you know, back in the day. They had a lot of ships, so you'd think they had to learn how to swim somewhere along the line. You know, people, even if they didn't know the regular breaststroke, they probably floated around. So I don't think that's that big of a deal. I think that
I'm sure it doesn't take more than one generation of people to figure out like a freestyle stroke.
Yeah.
Right? Do the doggy stroke. You watch a dog. You can do the same thing a dog does. You know, the doggy stroke, you know, I watched kids. Most kids, if you watch them, you ever teach the kid? I mean, the first thing they do is a doggy paddle. Mm-hmm. That's an easy instinct, you know, they just like a dog. And so, you know. But it's sad that so many people still drown today. They don't know how to swim. That's another thing you should learn. learn basic swimming, how to float at least. That's
tread water.
Tread water, yeah, tread water. It's not that hard. So anyway, how about we're getting close. I have to get out of here soon. But I thought that when you said cave swimmers, I thought you were going to talk about the cave, the guys who did the underwater rescue in Thailand.
Yeah, we talked about
it. We did a whole episode.
I know, but I thought you were bringing that back up again. And I actually read another story about that, and they said there's only two anesthesiologists in the whole world who are not only anesthesiologists, but, you know, premier
cave divers,
which is pretty, I guess there's not a lot of cave divers. It's not something that I would think I would, you know, you got to be a certain person to be a cave diver.
Yeah, it's definitely a strange hobby.
It's got to be strange, and I tell you what, man, you know, talk about dangerous. I mean, you're going, little nooks and crannies, and, I mean, if you're claustrophobic, you can't see anything, the water is moving.
Yeah. Not a shot in hell.
Well, you know, you talk people like that. The other thing there, I was watching this thing about Vietnam, and they had these soldiers. They called them tunnel rats, right? And so the North Vietnamese had tons of tunnels all over the place, right? Actually, the Japanese did this too. And so they would have Americans, they'd go down there with a pistol, and they put them in a hole, and they would go in there and flush out the enemy. And they call them tunnel rats. You know how dangerous? I mean, I think that, you know, the survival rate was like, you know, maybe 10%. But they had the balls to do it, you know? I mean, it's just...
Imagine, like, you get called up to the draft, and you're like, there's no way they're going to take me. I'm, like, too small for this. I'm, like, some scrawny dude. And then they look at you, and they're like, oh, you're a perfect tunnel rat. It's like you went from being like, oh, they're not going to want me on the front lines to, like, no, we're shoving you in a hole with a pistol.
Yeah.
Where you're likely going to die.
Yeah. Well, there's some tough people. You know, you go back and start reading some of the stuff like the B-17 and B-24. The Fortress. Yes, the B-17. What's with the other four-engine one? B-24. And they had the, but the B-17s were the real famous ones.
I watched a documentary on, I think it was Ford who built those, right? They used his assembly line?
No. Well, Ford did, but no, I know General Motors did, but
Rosie the Riveter built all those. What are you talking about?
But the point is, they had that assembly line for those, I think it was the B-27 bombers, set up so they could basically spit one out one every hour.
Yeah.
Once they got the thing up and running. In the beginning, there were a lot of issues because, so many new designs were constantly coming in that had to be adjusted. So he finally was like, no, this isn't what you're doing. You're giving me one design. And once you give me I'll give you a plane every hour.
Yeah. And it's interesting after the war, my dad worked for General Motors for like 40 years. So after the war, General Motors, it'll be even before the war, but they were making a car a minute, one car a minute, Cadillacs and Oldsmobiles, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That plant in Linden pumped out cars. That's how many cars they made, you know. And think about an hour. I think that now they try to go under an hour. I think Tesla, he was trying to beat that, you know, they were doing about a plane an hour. And same thing with tanks. They were once they got the assembly line. But I don't know who had, you know, I think Boeing was one. And I don't remember who else was making, you know, the aircraft. But my point I wanted to say is the bravery of these kids. They were 18, 19, 20 years old, and they knew. I could think at some of it, especially in the beginning, it was about a 75% chance you weren't going to come back. Now, it didn't mean you're going to die. A lot, you know, you would dive out. There was a lot of people survived it. They would, you know, jump out with a parachute. But still, man, that's a rough, you know. Can you imagine? You guys are, how old are you guys? You know, these are 18, 19, 20. How old are you, Sean, now?
Yeah, the back in the day, the war made people so hard.
How old are you now?
I'm 25.
So you'd be old. You'd be an old pilot. You would be like an old geezer.
I would be
geezer.
A seasoned vet, and I would be an ace.
What about you? How old are you now?
28.
Oh, you'd be retired. You'd be like teaching in the old.
I'm at the point where, like, if they do a draft now, I'm getting pretty close to where I wouldn't have to worry about it, right?
I don't know about that. Depends.
I think like 50s.
No. You better hope.
When did the draft, like, what was the maximum age for the draft?
I want to say, I think it's right now, it's between 18 and maybe 30, 35, 30. So I don't know. That's a good question.
So the world has to not break out into war for another 2 years, and then I'm good.
Listen, all you got, I don't know if anybody, you know, the kids nowadays would fight. But anyway, so listen, how about we
35.
35 it is.
Would either of you have dodged the draft during World War II or World War I for that matter?
No. World War II, no. Probably not. Vietnam, I would have ran right to Mexico.
No, you go to Canada. You could.
Why? Had, World I War II on a was, beach.
Mexico, World War I don't II think was, Mexico. By all accounts, worse than Vietnam.
I believed in the fight.
That's a good point.
All right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, well, you know, you had no choice because in World War II, if you didn't go, you could be conscientious objector.
What happened? I thought you were playing us off.
No, but I was going to say, but you make a good point, though. But if you said, no, I didn't want to go, yeah, we'd put you in jail or execute you. There's a great movie and a book. It's called, what was his name? It's like a Polish name. He was a firing squad.
My dad used to say that as like an insult to people. You'd be like, I bet that guy was a conscientious objector.
Well, you still go in battle. You know, you'd still have to go fight, and you weren't you could be a medic. A lot of guys became medics, and you know, you still were subject to the battle. But if you totally refused even that, they put you in jail. I don't know how many years. Dishonorable discharge, and then
but it was you can't be dishonorably discharged from something you've never been a part of.
Well, if you get drafted, you're done. You're in. And then so if you ask me, like I got a draft card, they just stopped it Vietnam. But you could get deferments, you know, if you were the only male in the family, or if you had, you know, like some bad eyesight or, you know, bad feet or stuff like that. But no.
I find that to be the most like messed up thing like a government can do to its people. Like force them to go to war.
So yeah, I think the first draft was the Civil War. I think the first draft was the Civil War. I think that's when they gave you basically a choice, you know. And what happened with that? Interesting.
Well, I feel like every country throughout history has like had like
drafts,
compelled military.
Yeah, yeah, I guess
like,
so. Yeah.
Imagine
yeah.
you're a Roman, like you're yeah. a 15-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're gonna make you go to war.
Yeah. Well, you better hope they don't bring the draft back. You better hope we don't have World War III. So, listen, on that note, let's pack it in. I got to go. So, listen, everybody, can you tell everybody where to find us, where to go? And I'm going to start putting the music on here.
Yeah, we're on Instagram at lg.association. You can send us an email at drcatchmore@icloud.com if you want to get in touch. Also, lifeguardsoffduty@gmail.com.
You guys put out that one. People should look at the one on Doug Parise, the YouTube video.
Yeah, we got a great video.
Check that out on Doug Parise.
It's a documentary. He's a great artist. Everyone check it out.
Incredible artist, Doug Parise. Right. Yeah, if you need like foot surgery or any shit like that, hit up your boy, Dr. Michael Catchmar, Jersey Shore Foot and Leg Center.
Send us an email. drcatchmar@icloud.com.
Yeah.
Subscribe. Watch us on YouTube.
Yeah, we're on all platforms, and, you know, don't forget, you can call us in live and chat with us. Don't
all right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
See you.
All right.
Stay out.
Stay out.
And
stay alive.
Stay alive.
One love, gang.